Welcome back to our study of Exodus. We are in chapter 12, and before we pick up where we left off, I just want to remind you of the first two verses of chapter 12. If you'll remember, the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, "This month shall be unto you the beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year to you." And that's so significant that the Lord changed their calendar. We want y'all to remember that. You're going to see that on your test. When Israel made its exodus from Egypt, God declared that month Abib as the beginning, and that's your key word, beginning month of the new calendar year for Israel. The beginning month of the new calendar year for Israel. The Lord can make all things new, can He? Even a calendar, right? So let's pick up together, please, with verse 14. I'm going to read 14 to you. "And this day shall be unto you for a memorial, and you shall keep it a feast to the Lord throughout your generations. You shall keep it a feast by an ordinance forever."
Perpetual means forever, right?
Right.
And so they're still doing that today. The Israelites are still recognizing the Passover annually. It's the covenant, you understand? And so there's significance to that. And we talked about this, I think, in our last session, how that they do it naturally through celebrating this festival annually, and how the parallel to that is Jesus is our Passover. Okay, and so we celebrate Jesus not by day, but through communion, and we can do that as often as we want to. I mean, you can celebrate Jesus every day, or, you know, a lot of you evangelical denominations will set aside one Sunday a month that they're going to have communion. And then it just becomes an ordinance, and it loses its impact if you're not cautious. And you don't want to just see this as something you become so familiar with that it no longer has meaning to you. And so for the Israelites, it's to remind them of the night or the day that God, the night that the death angel passed over them and killed all the firstborn of the Egyptians. For us, communion is a time to remember Jesus' death, burial, and resurrection and His coming again. Okay?
That's good. 7 days shall you eat unleavened bread. Even the first day you shall put away leaven out of your houses. For whosoever eateth leavened bread from the first day until the seventh day, that soul shall be cut off from Israel.
So, this, we're talking about 11, all right, there are 7 days they cannot have leaven among them for 7 days in any form, okay? Leaven is something that works and permeates until it gets through and takes over the whole. For us, on the Passover or celebration, communion and all that, there's not to be any sin in our life. There's nothing to be working in us that would take over us. That's why He tells us to judge ourselves and to take communion, not irreverently, but in a worthy manner. And He said, because of them not doing that, the early church, He said, many of you are sick, and some of you have died. And so this is still a very significant thing. Our life should be sinless and understanding that that is through Jesus. But we're to live clean lives. Okay?
"And in the first day there shall be a holy convocation, and in the seventh day there shall be a holy convocation to you. No manner of work shall be done in them, save that which every man must eat, that only may be done of you."
That holy convocation is where the people are assembled together, and on that day you cannot do any common labor. It is definitely a day of rest. Consequently, it's a Sabbath. Okay, so Passover, it didn't matter what day of the week it fell on, it was the 14th day, right, of the month. And so that 14th day of the month was a Sabbath, a day of rest. You couldn't do any work, or you'd be cut off from the nation of Israel. And so the celebration, Passover, started the celebration. Then you had 7 days, what's called the Feast of Unleavened Bread, or the Festival of Unleavened Bread. And so then that eighth day, Passover started, and then the eighth day, you have another Sabbath, another holy convocation. You remember when Jesus was crucified, or he was going through his, his mock trial and all this type of stuff, and they crucified him. They didn't want his body left on. They said this was a high day. Mm-hmm. It's evidently a double Sabbath, okay? Mm-hmm. And so you could have the Sabbath that fell on the Sabbath. Mm-hmm. And that would make it, a high Sabbath, okay?
I got that. Okay. And you shall observe the Feast of Unleavened Bread, for in this selfsame day have I brought your armies out of the land of Egypt. Therefore shall you observe this day in your generations by an ordinance forever.
Now, God set the date, and so you can't make it convenient for yourself, okay? The bottom line is all these 7 festivals that Israel celebrates were ordained by God. And it's a time to celebrate what God has done. In this case, it's Passover. It's delivering them from bondage. And so this is to be perpetual. As long as Israel is Israel, then they're to celebrate the 14th day of the first month as Passover. Okay?
One of the notes I had written down from our discussion the other day was that they're celebrating their new birth, their birth as a nation. You know, when they went into Egypt, they were a family, weren't they?
Yeah.
When they come out of Egypt, was 600,000 men, right? They're a nation, a large group of people coming out. Verse 18. In the first month, on the 14th day of the month at evening, you shall eat unleavened bread until the 1 20th day of the month at even.
So God's he's reiterating this thing. He's wanting to get this point across to the Israelites that this is a memorial time, a time of remembrance from the 14th day of the first month until the evening of the 21st day of the first month. There was not to be any unleavened bread eaten. I don't want anything in there that is going to have a progressive effect in your life that's not God, okay? And he's just using this as a symbol. In this case, for us, it would be he didn't want any sin in our life.
Mm-hmm. 7 days shall there be no leaven found in your houses, for whosoever eats that which is leaven, even that soul shall be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he be a stranger or born in the land. You shall eat nothing leavened in all your habitations, shall you eat unleavened bread.
God's serious about this.
Yeah.
If leaven is found in your midst there, you're severed, you're cut off, and it... God didn't have 2 sets of laws.
Mm-hmm.
When God gave the law, that law was for the native born. It didn't matter if you Jew or not. See, a lot of foreigners, a lot of Egyptians, foreigners, through the Israelites, a lot of them came out, the Exodus. It wasn't just the Israelites that made the Exodus, but a lot of foreigners came out with them. And so there's not a double law. The foreigners are obligated to do the same thing as Israel. you're going to be a citizen of this country, then you're going to abide by the laws that the citizens of this country abides by. And if you don't, you're cut off. Mm. We'd do well to learn from that. Mm.
Then Moses called for all the elders of Israel and said unto them, draw out and take you a lamb according to your families and kill the Passover. And you shall take a bunch of hyssop and dip it in the blood that is in the basin, and strike the lintel and the two side posts with the blood that is in the basin. And none of you shall go out at the door of his house until the morning.
So if you remember, this is to be less than a year old, mm-hmm. male. They're to take that, kill it, shed that blood, take that blood, put that blood on the doorpost, on the lintel. That's their salvation. You understand? That's going to be their deliverance from death.
Yeah.
Of course, obviously, our salvation, our deliverance from death is going to be the blood of Jesus applied to our hearts, and our hearts are our door. Mm-hmm. Things go in the door of the heart, okay?
Okay. In verse 23, for the Lord will pass through to smite the Egyptians, and when he sees the blood upon the lintel and on the two side posts, the Lord will pass over the door and will not suffer the destroyer to come in unto your houses to smite you.
You understand that even if an Israeli would not have put blood on the doorpost or lintel, their firstborn would have died. That blood was extremely important. And so what this is, it's an identifying mark. No, the death angel can't go here. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
And so extremely important to follow the protocol of God. A lot of people try to make their own rules. They develop their own doctrine, their own salvation. And it's amazing to hear people talk about, you know, they're going to live eternally with the Lord, but they haven't accepted Jesus Christ. Hmm. Well, my Bible reads that he's the only way.
Yeah.
You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
And so if we're going to be spared from death, then we're going to have to follow God's protocol.
Mm-hmm. And you shall observe this thing for an ordinance to thee and to thy sons forever. And it shall come to pass when you come to the land which the Lord will give you, according as he has promised, that you shall keep this service.
If you notice how many times this has been reiterated,
mm-hmm.
this Passover,
mm-hmm.
because it's pointing to Jesus. God's wanting to get this in. This is not just to be celebrated, you coming out of here. You celebrate this when you get into the promised land. Don't you ever stop celebrating this Passover on the 14th day of the first month.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And it shall come to pass when your children shall say unto you, what mean you by this service, that you shall say it is the sacrifice of the Lord's Passover, who passed over the houses of the children of Israel in Egypt, when he smote the Egyptians and delivered our houses, and the people bowed the head and worshipped.
So, this is a token that when you're celebrating this holiday, and that's what it was, is, okay, then the children, why are you not working? Why are we having a holiday? Then you tell them what this is all about.
Yeah.
And what you're doing, you keep before your children what the Lord has done, the mighty power of God, and why you serve this God. So there was great significance to this Passover. A lot of people celebrate holidays and don't even know what it's all about. God wanted the Israelites to make sure that their children knew what these holidays were all about, these festivals. And it was all about God. It was putting attention on God.
I've got another note to share with you because I think it's impactful. The death of the firstborn is what set them free. Y'all just chew on that for a minute and make the correlation with Jesus to that. And the children of Israel went away and did as the Lord had commanded Moses and Aaron. So did they.
So they listened to the instructions that Moses gave, and then they had respect to the Lord. So they left and went back to their respective families, and they're conveying what's been said. Understand, the elders are their leaders.
Yeah.
Okay. And so when Moses wants something done, then he's dependent upon the elders to get the word out to the rest of the people. And so that's the way this thing's operating here, okay?
And you know, that act of putting that blood on the doorpost and whatnot, that was an act of faith. They were believing that the Lord was going to protect them. And
how many of you ever put blood on your doorpost? That would be an unusual thing, wouldn't it? If somebody says, all right, if you put blood on your doorpost, and this is going to happen all around you, but if you have blood on the doorpost, it won't happen to you. Yeah, right. Now, you better believe, you understand, in this case. And they did. But Moses had a track record, too, you understand.
Right.
That what he said was going to happen, happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't think he had a hard time convincing them that they'd better put blood on the doorpost.
Yeah.
They'd already seen what happened to Egypt through these first nine plagues.
Not just put the door on the bug, but you stay put. You stay inside. You stay where I tell you to stay, and don't move until I tell you to move.
Yes, not enough to have it on the door. You better stay behind it.
Yes, with that protection. That's right.
This is where one of the things, if you ever heard the phrase, plead the blood.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is one of the things people will use. I plead the blood, you know, the blood has me covered, and so this is not going to happen. I don't particularly care for the phrase, because to me, plead is begging, right? You plead with someone, you're begging someone. Rather than to plead the blood, we're to, in faith, we speak out our blood covenant. We have a covenant with the Lord Jesus Christ. Our protection is the Lord Jesus Christ. I'm not begging God to protect me. God's already given me the protection through Jesus. So what I must do is declare what God has done to the enemy. You follow me?
Oh, yeah.
Very good. Verse 29. And it came to pass that at midnight the Lord smote all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh that sat on his throne unto the firstborn of the captive that was in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of the cattle.
You notice in that 29th verse, the 28th verse, the descendants of Israel, not just the elders, but the rest of them followed the instructions as well.
Yeah.
They were convinced too.
Yeah.
So at midnight, the Lord goes through the land of Egypt, the death angel, the angel of the Lord, and strikes the firstborn from Pharaoh to the firstborn of the person in prison, and the firstborn of all the Egyptian animals. Now, that can't be coincidental.
No.
From the top to the least, and the animals, all firstborn, are the ones that die, because that's what God said would happen. And he had a reason for that, because it's pointing to the death of his firstborn.
And Pharaoh rose up in the night, he and all his servants and all the Egyptians. And there was a great cry in Egypt, for there was not a house where there was not one dead.
Can you imagine everybody in a nation, every household in a nation, having a death in their family?
Mm-hmm.
simultaneously. Mm-hmm. It's beyond comprehension, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine the cry that's going out all over the land? I mean, I honestly can't fathom it myself.
Mm-mm.
But this is of great magnitude. And when God brought the hammer of judgment down, he brought it down. And it came down hard. It was severe judgment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
And he called for Moses and Aaron by night and said, "Rise up, get you forth from among my people, both you and the children of Israel, and go serve the Lord as you have said."
So Pharaoh's convinced now.
Yeah.
And these his elders, get out of here. If you don't leave this land, all of us are going to be dead. Get out. Go on. We're not putting any stipulations on you now. You go, you take your people, you
yeah.
take your flocks, you do whatever. Just get out of the land.
Uh-huh. And he said, "Bless me also."
Pardon?
He said, "Bless me also."
Yeah.
He needed some blessing, didn't he? In verse 33, "And the Egyptians were urgent upon the people that they might send them out of the land in haste, for they said, 'We be all dead men.'"
They're all afraid they're going to die if they didn't get out of the country.
Yeah. "And the people took their dough before it was leavened, their kneading troughs being bound up in their clothes upon their shoulders."
So they took their unleavened dough, their kneading troughs, their clothes, and they carried them on their back. That's why they had to eat that Passover in a state of readiness, preparedness, be ready to go. Why? Because God knew that they were going to be thrust out of the land. Get out of here now. You don't have time to pack.
Mm-hmm.
You pack before.
Yeah.
You understand?
Mm-hmm. "And the children of Israel did according to the word of Moses. And they borrowed of the Egyptians jewels of silver and jewels of gold and raiment. And the Lord gave the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians, so that they lent unto them such things as they required, and they spoiled the Egyptians."
Now, this is an amazing thing.
Yeah.
It's not that they just made their exodus to get out of bondage, but God's making provision. He told Abraham 430 years prior to that. He's already told Abraham that they're going to come out with great wealth.
Mm-hmm.
And so God has Moses to tell the people, all right, ask the Egyptians for silver, for gold, for things, you know. And so they do. And so not only is the land devastated, but the Israelites going out with the Egyptians' wealth. Think about it. Now, I'll just jump ahead of myself, okay? Well, what do you need all that wealth for in the wilderness? Well, we're going to build a tabernacle. We're going to have a golden altar. We're going to have a golden table. We're going to have golden lampstand. We're going to have golden bases, silver bases. You think of all the stuff that was going, that would need to build, to fabricate and erect this tabernacle. Well, God has provision for them, so they get out here in the middle of nowhere, so to speak, and they have everything they need.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
God will equip you. You know that you have all that you need. You just have to develop it. The potential's there. The potential for the tabernacle was there, but it had to be built. It had to be fabricated. Well, there's potential in you. It has to be developed. There's a lot of object lessons you can learn out of this. Out of all this.
"And the children of Israel journeyed from Ramesses to Succoth, about 600,000 on foot that were men beside children. And a mixed multitude went up also with the men, and the flocks and the herds, even very much cattle."
So they left from the city of Ramesses. Remember, this is a city they're building. Remember? Mm-hmm. And so they left from there, which was in the land of Goshen, okay. They left from there and they make their journey. Now it's interesting, back, I don't know, 2-3 years ago, I was looking at something and I'll be kind. Somebody didn't know what they were talking about. Mm-hmm. Was telling how that Israel walked through shallow water and how the place that they crossed the Red Sea was a very narrow place and all that. But I want you to think about this. An entire army is drowned in that place. You think about, and I'm going to be very conservative, with 1 million people. I mean, there's 600,000 soldiers with their families, okay?
Right.
Going through. No, we don't know where they crossed.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know how wide the river was. I know this, it was wide enough that the waters were a wall and deep enough for the waters to be a wall, wide enough for an entire army to be drowned in it. And so there's more to this than some of these philosophers are trying to say and trying to discredit God. Mm-hmm. But they left from the city of Ramesses. They made their journey, and they come up into the area. They're being led, mm-hmm. You understand? They're not going the way of their choice. They're being led, and you'll find they don't like the choice.
Mm-hmm.
We're to be led by the Spirit, and oftentimes, all the time, your flesh is not going to like where the Spirit of God is leading you.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you have to keep it under subjection. Okay?
So to remember the magnitude of this, we're going to ask you this question on the test, okay? That according to Exodus 12:37, over 600,000 men, and that's what you're going to want to remember, left Egypt on foot when they made their exodus.
When you see the number, Israel being numbered, it's a military census. You'll find that those who are able to go to war, that's who they numbered. Okay?
Okay.
And so it's never an over-the-board census of the population.
Yeah.
It's showing you the military strength of them. Okay?
Verse 39. Well, I want to point out verse 38 one more time. A mixed multitude.
Yeah, we need to talk about that.
Okay.
The mixed multitude
mm-hmm.
of people that left Egypt. Large number of flocks and livestock, mixed multitude. We mentioned this earlier. It wasn't just Israelis that was making their exodus. I'm going to tell you, all this, these things that was happening to Egypt got the attention of a lot of Egyptians.
Yeah.
And so they had a lot of people to go out with them. And you understand that when you go out, then you're committed to follow that God. They're seeing a God like they've never seen before. There's no God to compare to this God. What other God can bring about such devastation on a nation? And so I think the fear of God gripped the hearts of the people, and many of them made their exodus with the Israelites.
Verse 39, and they baked unleavened cakes of the dough which they brought forth out of Egypt, for it was not leavened, because they were thrust out of Egypt and could not tarry, neither had they prepared for themselves any victual.
And so they have enough provision to stay alive. Maybe they don't have what they want, but they have enough to sustain them. Man shall not live by bread alone, right? But they're going to be living physically by unleavened bread for a little while. Okay? It's going to be sufficient to get them out. God knows what you need. You know what you want.
Mm-hmm.
But God knows what you need.
You know, you think about, this reminds me of even when Jesus sent out his disciples, he said, don't take that extra coat. Just take what you're wearing, shoes on your feet, and go. That's what we do, right? When the Lord sends us out, we have to trust him completely. He said it many times, but there's so much truth to this if you start pondering on it. When he gives you the vision, when he commissions you forth, he will provide. He will. And so this was, here again, taking just that unleavened dough. That's going to be all you need for now. I'll take care of you. I gotcha.
You think about this, they had a pretty good meal before they left. I mean, they had the meat and all that with the pie, so they weren't to leave anything left over. In other words, you guys eat to the full.
Yeah.
You got a journey ahead of you.
Yeah, that's good. All right, verse 40. Now the sojourning of the children of Israel who dwelt in Egypt was 430 years. And it came to pass at the end of the 430 years, even the selfsame day it came to pass that all the hosts of the Lord went out from the land of Egypt.
So it says that the very same day,
yeah,
the 430 years were completed, Israel left Egypt. Now, I heard some teaching back some time ago that I didn't agree with on why the 30 years. God told Abraham that they'll be afflicted 400 years, and they'll leave in the fourth generation. And so this person was saying they had to stay 30 more years because of such and such. No, the bottom line was when they first went down there, Joseph was in control. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we come out in God's time. It was God who told Moses when to go to Egypt to deliver them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all working right in the timing of God, and it's all working in agreement with what God told Abraham. God did not lie to Abraham.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The key word there is afflicted. 400 years.
The night they, it is a night to be much observed unto the Lord for bringing them out from the land of Egypt. This is that night of the Lord to be observed of all the children of Israel in their generations.
Here again, you get another reiteration of this Passover. This is the night that God delivered all of Israel, all the Israelites from the nation of Egypt. And so, don't you forget to celebrate this. You keep this in remembrance. All your life, pass it on to your children. They're to pass it on to their children. And it's never to stop. You hand it from one generation, hand it down from one generation to another generation. They need to know what God did.
Mm-hmm. And the Lord said unto Moses and Aaron, this is the ordinance of the Passover. There shall no stranger eat thereof.
So the Lord gave to Moses and Aaron stipulation concerning eating the Passover meal. Now, first off, foreigners were not allowed to eat the Passover meal. Any slave of the Israelites who had been bought and circumcised could eat the Passover meal. Okay, and a slave would have been from a foreign country. And so you can't say that no foreigner, you have to keep it all in context. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
And so when you go down the line, it says that a slave could, if he was circumcised, if he wasn't, he could not be. Now listen to this. Anyone who was not a descendant of Israel or any hired servant was forbidden to eat the Passover meal. The Passover meal was to be eaten inside the house. That it was, none of it was to be taken outside the house. And no bone of that sacrifice could be broken. What's it doing? It's pointing to Jesus. No bone could be broken. Am I ahead of you?
That's okay.
Go ahead and read the verses.
Okay. I'll pick up with
no bone will be broken is the last thing.
Yeah. And all the congregation of Israel shall keep it. And when a stranger shall sojourn, 48, with thee, and will keep the Passover to the Lord, let all his males be circumcised, and let him come near and keep it. And he shall be as one that is born in the land, for no uncircumcised person shall eat thereof.
All right. The entire nation of Israel was required to keep the Passover festival, all right?
Okay.
Any foreign person who came to live with the Israelites, in other words, he becomes a citizen, then he had to be circumcised before he was allowed to eat the Passover. Once he does that, now he's a citizen. He's not a foreigner. You follow me? And this is why it's so important to keep the context, because you could say, well, because that person's of that nationality, they were never allowed to eat the Passover. But it didn't matter about the nationality, it mattered about the citizenship, and you couldn't get into citizenship without taking the covenant, and that covenant required circumcision. And so one who decided to dwell among the Israelites and was circumcised could eat the Passover. Okay, time's up and I have to stop. All right.
Okay. Very good.